Hey everyone, Jason Klein here. I'm the senior minister here at Refocus Christian Church, located in Follansbee, West Virginia. I just want to say thank you so much for listening to our content. Feel free to share or like or leave any comments you have. We're always looking to engage with people. What are some questions you have? What are some things that you might be learning? And at the same time, if you want to know more about us, check us out at refocuschurch.com, which also has a link to our Facebook there. And so just has upcoming events, things that are going on, sermon series that we're in. So once again, thanks for being a part of this. Thank you for listening in. And as always, please feel free to share and comment or like, because we want to make sure that we're trying to reach as many people possible with the good news of Jesus Christ. All right. Have a great day. Announcements, which is really not necessary to talk that long. So this morning we're going to be, we have a special guest, and I want to make sure that I give her time to share with us who she is and what she's doing. So I don't want to take away from that. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask you to, we're going to take a minute and just pray and ask God to kind of show up this morning to show us what we need and ask the Spirit to come in and speak to us as only it can. God, we thank you so much for who you are. Thank you for the fact that you love us the way that you do. I pray this morning that, as always, protect the words coming out of my mouth, protect those who are hearing. God, I pray that your Spirit is in us and it's teaching us, and we just love you. God, we thank you for the mothers in our lives, and we thank you for just the women in our lives, and that capacity is so much larger than just being a mom. And I pray that you just continue to bless the mothers that are here, the mothers who are not with us. You just continue to show not only the importance of who they are, but allow them to feel loved and appreciated. And thank you so much for loving us the way that you do, for being the greatest example of a father as a parent and what that looks like. And may we continue to model that in our own lives with our children. God, we love you. We thank you. Just let me pray. Amen. So this is for all the mothers who froze their buns off on metal bleachers at soccer games instead of watching from cars. So when their kids asked, "Did you see my goal?" they could say, "Of course. I wouldn't have missed it for the world," and mean it. This is for all the mothers who have sat up all night with sick children in their arms, wiping up barf laced with Oscar Mayer wieners and cherry Kool-Aid, saying, "It's okay, honey. Mommy's here." For all the mothers who run carpools and make cookies and sew Halloween costumes. For all the mothers who don't. What makes a good mother anyway? Is it patience, compassion, broad hips, the ability to nurse a baby, cook dinner, and sew a button on a shirt all at the same time? Or is it heart? Is it the ache you feel when you watch your son or daughter disappear down the street, walking to school alone for the very first time? The jolt that takes you from sleeping to dread, from bed to crib at 2 a.m. to put your hand on the back of a sleeping baby? I think so. So this is for all the mothers who sat down with their children and explained all about making babies, and for all the mothers who wanted to but just couldn't. This is for reading Goodnight Moon twice a night for a year and then reading it again just one more time. This is for all the mothers who mess up, who yell at their kids in grocery stores and swat them in despair and stomp their feet like a tired two-year-old who wants ice cream before dinner. This is for all the mothers who taught their children to tie their shoelaces before they started to school, and for all the mothers who opted for Velcro instead. For all the mothers who bite their lips, sometimes until they bleed, when their 14-year-old decided to dye their hair green. This is for all the mothers who lock themselves in the bathroom when babies keep crying and won't stop. This is for all the mothers who show up at work with spit up in their hair and milk stains on their blouses and diapers in their purse. This is for the mothers who teach their sons to cook and their daughters to sink a jump shot. This is for all mothers whose heads turn automatically when a little voice calls mom in a crowd, even though their own offspring are at home or are grown. This is for mothers who have lost their children way too soon. This is for all the mothers whose children have gone astray and can't find the words to reach them. This is for all the mothers who sent their child to school with a stomach ache, assuring them that they would be just fine once they got there, only to get a call from the school nurse an hour later asking them to please pick up their kid right away. This is for young mothers stumbling through diaper changes and sleep deprivation, and mature mothers learning to let go. For working moms and stay-at-home moms, single mothers and married mothers, mothers with money and mothers without. This is for you, so hang in there. The world would be a terrible place without the love of mothers everywhere. You make it a more civil, caring, and safe place for the precious children in our world. So from all of us to you, thank you. I came across that poem this week and absolutely loved it. And if you've noticed, my wife's not here because Griffin is sick and it kind of travels through kids. And we didn't want to make anyone else sick, but it made me think a lot of who she is and what she does. And for those of you whose moms are still here, don't forget to thank them today. Because you'll never understand what they've gone through to keep you alive sometimes. It's such a big thing to be a mom. I grew up with a single mom, and my mom worked, I think, a minimum of 3 jobs her whole life. And but what I loved about my mom is my mom was the kind of person who didn't matter. She was like my mom, but then she was like the neighborhood's kids' moms. Like, they would come to her for advice, or they would come to eat our popsicles. It's probably both. But my mom was, she modeled for me what it meant to love somebody and what it meant to show up. And for kids, that's such an important thing, is having that person who will love them unconditionally. And listen, I know that not everyone, every story for every mother is different. So we don't fit into a mold. But I also know that there are people that might not have their own kids that are still a mom to someone, still look up to you. There's kids all over this world that are in desperate need of good homes. I've invited Alexis Hardrow. I'll let her introduce herself. But Alexis Hardrow is going to speak to us this morning about foster care and why I think as a church we should find a way to partner with those who do foster care, because I think it's such a huge need. If you guys have ever, he's not here, Justin Brown. If you've ever met Justin, when we were here 11 years ago, Justin lived with us for about 4 years. And we were newlyweds and took on a teenager. No idea why. I love him, man. He graduated. He's not here because he was in Columbus this weekend. He graduated with his bachelor's in pastoral leadership. And he and his wife, Jess, if you've met them, they are actually fostering right now. They have a young lady who's a teenager that lives with them. And it's really interesting because listen, we went through some ups and downs with him, and I cannot take hardly any credit. Kim Weaver was a huge part of his life and continues to be a huge part of his life. But I know when he lived with us, it was up and down, man. But there was one point after he lived with us for about a year, and I remember someone saying to me, like, "You're so special. Like, you guys are so special to do that." And I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm not, though. Like, you can do this, too. Like, it's not, I don't think we're special. I think we saw a need. And I think God moved us to fill that need. And so the reason why I've invited Alexis is I believe there's a need. And I believe that she can give us some information on what that need is. And I really want to encourage you to, if you have an opportunity to talk with her after, or pray about it. There are so many kids that they need good homes like this.
No? Is it?
Is it on? 1920. Let me see. I'm going to turn my other mic off.
Check. There we go.
Hi, everyone. I really appreciate you guys having me out here today. My name is Alexis Hardrow. I work with a company called Burlington United Methodist Family Services. I actually am originally from Weirton, so Follinsby's not very far. But I just wanted to, before I kind of go into everything, I wanted to thank all the mothers here. I mean, you guys, I don't know how you do it, but you really make a lasting impact on, you know, biological, foster children. I mean, it goes so much further than just a simple thank you for what you do. But if you would like to start.
Yeah. So the first question is, can you tell us just more about, well, who you are? I think you've kind of already answered that, but can you tell us more about the company that you work with?
Yeah. So Burlington, I'll just shorten it to Burlington, it's a lot easier. They have a lot of different services available. I would say it's kind of a community-based organization. They have different programs for children specifically, but they do things for families as well. For me specifically, I work with their foster care program.
Sis, can you tell us more about what your foster care looks like today?
So there are right now in just West Virginia alone, there are 7,000 children in need of good homes. I was looking up some statistics, and I think in the United States it was 100,000. I mean, the numbers were just crazy. But it was, when you mentioning teenagers, about 30% of that number in West Virginia are teens from 13 to 17. And I think I found something else as well. Let me look. Don't mind me, I'm not a big public speaker, so I wrote some notes in case I forgot. But one thing I did find, though, is that more than half of those children will be placed back with their parents. About a quarter of those get adopted, and unfortunately a lot of those children fail out of the system.
So, speaking of teenagers, Justin lived with us. It was kind of a weird circumstance. Why do you think it's so hard for teenagers to get placed?
Oh, man. So with children being removed, unfortunately, a lot of them come from really bad situations. I mean, in West Virginia, unfortunately, the opioid crisis is very high. A lot of children were removed from that. But teenagers specifically, once they're sometimes in the foster care system, they may remain in the foster care system. And getting moved from home to home, there's a lot of trauma that comes with that. And oftentimes, they will enact that anger that they have on their situation to maybe like the foster family, and a lot of people who don't really understand where they're coming from don't really know how to handle that. Or they'll try to keep pushing because they're like, well, everyone else in my life has let me down. So unfortunately, it's just kind of like a learned behavior. So teens, I have to say, are probably have it the hardest. And most people out there, when they think fostering, they think of children. So teens are unfortunately kind of like a last thought.
So as a church, so part of this conversation came from, I was at a preaching summit in Indiana in March, and one of the guys who was there was talking about the importance of foster care. And one of the things he said, he's like, you know, when I first heard about foster care, he's like, as a dad, he's like, I'll be honest, he's like, it's not really my thing. It's like, it's not that I don't care. He's just like, is from my perspective as a dad, I'm like, I have my own kids. Like, why would I want to take on someone else's? And he said, but, you know, through lots of prayer and his wife kind of reminding him, you know, and saying, hey, you look at how much we have and look what God has given us. He kind of took it, you know, him and his wife decided to connect with their, so that he's from a church out in Colorado. They decided to start connecting with the local organizations that handle foster care. And so from that conversation, he became the director of an organization that runs out of his church. So his church is now connected with the foster care homes in Colorado. And I think at the time he said that they had started this conversation, there was about 800 kids within, I think he said, a couple hundred miles of where they are. So not all of Colorado. But there were 800 kids who didn't have foster homes. And so what they did as a church is they started getting information out. And, you know, how do they inform people? What can you do? And he said within 2 years, they had found homes for every single one of those kids. And I was just like, that's insane. And so him and I had a chance to talk. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, the reason that we realize that most people don't foster is because they just don't know. They just have a lack of information. One, they don't realize how bad it is, or two, they have no idea where to even start that conversation. So as a church, if someone were to say to me, hey, Jason, I really want to get into foster care, and I sent them to you, what would be some of those steps to help get them on that process?
Yeah, so we would do, typically I start with some of the more boring stuff, a bunch of paperwork. We do run a CPS screen and then a background check as well. But it's typically a 2 to 3 month period, which is actually a lot shorter than a lot of other organizations are. But we do paperwork, fingerprinting, and then we also do a 6-week training course. It is geared to help you work with children who are dealing with trauma. So we help you have learn different skills to deal with anything you might encounter. And then after that, there's a bunch of little things. I'm really new to foster care just in general, so there's a lot that I'm still learning, and there's a lot of little things that I haven't even gotten to experience yet with families. But then once everything's been cleared, all the paperwork is done, then we would move forward with having a child placed with you. I don't know if that answers.
Yeah, no. So what are... So I think everyone's in a different stage in life, right? Some people have the ability to foster, some people don't. What are other ways, I think you and I have talked to some other churches that are connected with you, what are other ways churches have got involved that maybe they're not necessarily fostering full-time, but what other ways have they helped with what you guys are trying to accomplish?
So, yeah, like he was mentioning, I've talked to other churches where they have older congregations, and unfortunately they're not able to do fostering. A lot of children who will come into a new home, they're sometimes left with nothing. We had a boy who was placed, he was 17. He had the clothes on his back, and there were holes all in everything he had. But one thing that I've gotten a big hit on, a lot of churches have suggested, like welcome boxes, things like blankets, toys, I think something to make them feel kind of at home. I mean, it's so intense of what they're going through. So I think knowing that there are people out there who are thinking of them and caring about them would be a big thing. And I think raising awareness just as a church in general is another thing that churches could do.
And there was something, and I'm probably going to get the word wrong. Was it respite? Mm-hmm. Is that right? Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so it's called respite foster care. Sometimes it's called emergency care. But specifically for foster care, you would technically be certified as you would a normal foster parent. But you essentially give a break to foster parents. I mean, you know, as just normal everyday parents, sometimes things become a little tough and you need kind of a little bit of a break. But it helps relieve that family so they don't have a burnout. And it can be from one day, just an evening, a weekend, a week. I mean, it's very short term. It's a good opportunity for people who might even be interested in foster care, but don't want to just kind of take that complete dive in. They maybe want to have like a one day and just kind of see what it's like. But it is something that is also very beneficial, just as foster care as a whole.
And Alexis, I thank you so much for coming, and I'm hoping that the people will get connected with you. I'm assuming you brought some information. I'll make sure to get information out on Facebook. I thank you for sharing, and I hope and I pray that we can partner with you to maybe make a difference in the life of a kid or two. So
yeah, I just want to thank you guys for letting me speak. And I'm going to stay after a little bit. I do have some more information in my car if you guys would be interested, but I really appreciate you letting me speak today. Some of them are in residential homes, like group homes. Sometimes they might be in temporary care with family, or they're just technically like a ward of the state. I don't even really have a good question or answer for that, but I think a lot of it, they'll go to residential places where they can kind of like house more children, stuff like that. Yeah, sorry. So the age limit is 21 to 65. 65. Did anyone? Yeah. You're fine. Well, there is actually.
The question Stacy asked was your background. You know, if you have a background that maybe you've done some things, what are. Does that necessarily disqualify you?
I don't think it necessarily disqualifies you. I know they do run a background check. I think their big thing is making sure there's not anything that would have, like, domestic violence or... but, I mean, their eligibility is over 21, good physical and emotional health, stable family relationships, able to manage financial obligations, willingness to undergo police and child abuse clearances... but I mean, we've had families who have had, you know, some pasts, and they've been fantastic foster parents. So I don't think that that just labels someone as a automatic no, because I think there's a lot more to just one story, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you never know. There could be that one person and you could be the change of a child who needs it. Yeah, I think it's until they're done with school. So I think it is technically till 21, but usually it is babies to 18.
It must be really hard for someone to, I mean, I get attached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest thing that I have come, that a lot of people will come back with is the fact that I don't know if I'd be able to do it because I get attached really easily. So ultimately when a child is removed from a home, reunification is the end goal. Not always does it happen like that. They do try to make it a shorter process. So typically it's like an 18 months if a child is removed that they try to have a end idea what's going to happen. They give the parent many opportunities to try to better themselves, but if they're not making any efforts, then parental rights will be removed and then adoption will begin. I don't think there's really any way to not feel that level of attachment, because I think, you know, you're helping them, you're seeing what's going through. But I do like to think that ultimately the focus of the child is, you know, their best intentions in mind whenever they're going through the whole process of whether they go back to the family or not. You're welcome. Did anyone else have any other questions? Yes, there is financial compensation. So they do, based on the age range, and then maybe if a child has a disability, they typically pay, I believe it's $30 to $33 a day each day. And then respite care, you actually also get paid for however many days the child's with you. And then foster families are also given a monthly allowance for clothes for them as well. So yes, there is financial, I guess, compensation for it. Yeah, I believe children, whenever they are placed into the system, I believe they have Medicaid, but there's also, there's not as much I know about that, but I know that Medicaid would help. I don't think that the financial costs would go back onto the foster parents. I don't have specifics on that because I have never had anyone ask, but I can't see that it would fall on the foster parents. I think it would be something that the state would take care of, because they're technically would be in the custody of the state at that point. Sorry, there's a lot that I'm still learning.
Any other questions? Alexis will be staying after for a little bit if you have any more, want to kind of meet with her. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for just coming in. Like I said, even when just make raise awareness a little bit, I think it'll make a difference. And I'm actually not going to preach too long this morning, which is okay with me. But I do want to go, we're going to look at one, she might have been young, I don't know. We're going to look at the mother of Moses, Jochebed is her name. And we're actually going to be in Exodus. We'll start out in chapter 1, verses 1 through 16. It's interesting because the end of Genesis and Exodus is interesting because the end of Genesis sees Joseph and Jacob and his family, and they're now in Egypt, and they've done all these things and helped them overcome famine, and they were really kind of treated with such a great deal of respect. And then we get walk into Exodus, and new Pharaoh's in charge, and basically he just decides that he hates the Egyptians. he's afraid of them because he realizes they're becoming really numerous, and his concern is if they become too many, that they might partner with their enemies and become a threat from the inside. So starting in Exodus 1, verse 1 through 16, these are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers in that generation died. But the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor, and they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor and brick and mortar, with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Sapphira and Puah, when you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that a baby is a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live. So the Israelites had become so numerous that the Egyptians were like, if you see a boy, kill him. From the start, we can't let this continue to happen. They were terrified. However, and this is where Jochebed comes in. She's the mother of Moses. And what happened was, she wasn't afraid of the king. She saw that her son was born, Exodus 2, verses 1 through 10. It said, now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And she saw that he was a fine child. She hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and covered it with tar and pitch. And she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. Her sister stood at a distance to see, his sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slaves to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying. She felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? Yes, go, she answered. So the girl went, got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this baby and nurse him for me and I will pay you. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. It's so interesting to me because Jochebed essentially became like the foster parent of her own kid. She just didn't realize. Like, Pharaoh's daughter found the baby, found a woman, said, hey, take care of my kid. Probably not aware that was Moses' mom. And she raised him. And if you go on, it says that she raised him in the ways of his people. So much so that as he got older, growing up in the Egyptian household, he started to turn away from that because he wanted to be his own with his own people. The story of Moses, the first he kills a man, essentially a fellow Hebrew is being beaten ruthlessly. And so he connects with him and kills a man and ends up running off into the desert. But eventually would come back and set the people free. And in all of this starts back to a mother who loved her kid so much that she would do whatever it took to protect him. Jochebed would save a nation. But here's what's interesting. No one made a movie necessarily about her. We talk about Moses, right? We think about what he did and the 10 plagues and he parted the Red Sea and all the glorious things that he did, but the reason he was able to even do those things is because he had a mom who cared. A mom who stood up against a corrupt political system of her day and said, I don't care if you tell me I have to kill my kid or not, I'm not doing it. And then when she raised him, she raised him up right. Not only in the knowledge of who he was historically, his people, but of the God that he served and that they respected and they feared. She instilled in him what was necessary for him in order to become the Moses that you and I talk about. His mom, who in a weird way became his foster mom, would love him and teach him, and God would use that to mold this young man into someone who would eventually stand in the face of a king and defy him. Don't underestimate the power of what it means to provide a good home for a child. If you have children, don't take that lightly. Listen, I know they all drive us nuts. I got three boys. Like after 6 o'clock in our house, it's like the Grand Prix happened. It's like chaos. Like they run around in circles. The other night we were talking, and Griffin does this thing where he chases the other two. Like, I don't know why Everett does it, so he mimics them. But listen, they break my stuff. They eat the food. Sometimes they're sick, and it's gross. As they get older, and I experience this with Justin, sometimes they walk away. They make mistakes. They try to hide things. I remember when Justin was close to 18 years old, and he probably doesn't remember this story, but he was at a friend's house, and he called me, and he's like, hey, you know, can I stay over tonight? And we were still learning the whole being a parent thing. And I was like, yeah, but I've never met this guy's, this friend's parents, and I'd like to meet them. Where are they? Like, we'll come over. I'll drive over and I'll meet them. And he was like, oh, yeah, they're busy. I'm like, okay. I'm still going to meet them, just so we know. Like, if you want to stay the night, I need to meet them. And he's like, all right. He's like, well, I'll have my friend's dad call you. And I'm like, okay, that seems reasonable, because when his dad calls, I'm going to ask him for his address. And I think any reasonable parents would be like, yeah, come on over. And so about 2 minutes go by, and we get this phone call. And I pick up, and he starts talking. And I put the phone down. I was like, I was talking to Danny. I was like, that's not a grown man on the other end of that line. That's a teenager with a deep voice. And he's faking it. And she's like, are you kidding me? I was like, no, I'm dead serious. Like we talk, you see this in movies all the time. Like, do they really think this works? Like, teenagers, do you really think that works? It doesn't. And so I pick up the phone. I continue talking to this kid. I ask him a few plain things. And one of them's like, what's your address? Well, I don't know it. Oh, you don't know the house you live in? You bought it. I mean, you seem like a reasonable adult. And basically just kind of went around, and eventually the kid was like, not my dad. I'm like, oh no, you got me. Like, but it was the weirdest thing ever, because stuff like that happened. Okay. So he did pay attention. Yeah. So, but I say that because, listen, there were ups and downs. There was moments when he kind of walked away a little bit and made some mistakes. But I'm proud of the man that he's become. And so don't underestimate the value that you have as parents, as guardians, as foster parents, as aunts. And like I said, in the beginning, I know that sometimes not everyone has the same situation for kids, but if there are kids in your life to look up to you, don't take that. Don't take that lightly. Because who knows? The kid that you love, the kid that you save, the kid that you foster, they might just save a nation. That's pretty cool. All right, let's pray.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for checking out this week's podcast. Hey, if you want to learn more about our church, check us out at refocuschurch.com or look us up on Facebook at Refocus Christian Church. We're located in Fallonby, West Virginia. We'd love to have you and your family out. Come check out and see what God is doing in our people, in our community, in our church. All right. Later.